720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth, hanging with you till 2 a.m. Thanks for being with us tonight. I would say this chilly evening because it's December, but it's not. What was it, 56 overnight? Is that what you said, Jennings?
55.
55. I will take it.
It's and that means it's going to get warmer than it is now.
I love it.
I've already been joking with Bill Cerrones up here. You know, maybe we should turn on the air conditioning.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. However, that is really exciting because I looked earlier today and this time last year it was zero. So I will absolutely take mid-50s over zero. So I would say I hope everyone's cozied up and warm and snuggly listening to their radio tonight. But maybe not so much warm. I hope you have the windows open and that you're all enjoying this weather because it's lovely. Well, we've got lots going on the show tonight. We're going to be talking with the unofficial official political correspondent, Rex Hupke. We love talking to him anytime there's big political stuff happening. And anyone who has looked at any sort of media in the last week would know there is certainly quite a bit going on. So we're going to be talking about that. We're going to have tech headlines at midnight, talking about all kinds of big tech stories, all the top stories. Some of them are really, really interesting. Some are just plain weird. Some are downright cool. And then later in the show, we're talking with a local filmmaking duo who is doing comedy for a great cause, and they have taken their show to Kickstarter, and they're in the final couple days, and it's up to us to make their project happen. So we're going to be talking to all those folks. So good times, good times. Hello, esteemed producer Shane Reardon.
What's cracking, Guth? I'm
What's cracking? I like that.
How you doing?
That's good. You're on it.
Yeah.
How was your week?
Week's been boring.
It's been kind of quiet.
Right? It's just kind of a slow week. And, you know, seasonal depression, right? I've been thinking about seasonal depression a lot lately.
Okay.
People, when it gets cold and around these wintry months, they start going into a deep hibernation of the mind.
The mind, the body, the spirit, all those things.
It's the opposite for me right now. To where it's too warm for the season.
So it bums you out?
Exactly.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because I appreciate the cold, and I appreciate just the Christmas feeling, as corny or cheesy as that sounds.
No, that's fair. I wish more people did.
Yeah, I love seeing all these Christmas lights and all the people going around celebrating commercialism and spending time with their families, but then it's not cold to match it, and there isn't snow. And I saw a headline today that said we're not really going to have a white Christmas, and I wanted to get angry, but I didn't. It's disappointing to me. I appreciate the cold.
That's fair.
So that's affecting my seasonal depression.
That's interesting. Do you normally struggle with anything? I don't know if that's too personal to ask on the air.
Yeah, it's way too personal. Stop it. No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't.
I admit that I like later in the winter, I find it, for me, it's just kind of a lack of energy.
Sure.
I feel really, bummed out is not even the phrase, really. It's not that I'm necessarily down. I just feel kind of...
End of January, early
February. I just feel like, ugh.
It's because you have nothing to look forward to. Like, you look forward to the holiday season, and now you've got nothing to look forward to but spring, maybe?
No,
that's not it? Okay,
no,
I'm going to turn my mic off.
It's more like... It's still gray.
Yeah, it's that grayness. It's kind of when, like, the sky is just kind of this bleak gray.
Give me
some
sun, something.
Now, what I do, though, in stark contrast to that, so I really feel like I'm kind of like dragging ass in February. But as soon as it starts getting warm, it's like I have been mainlining espressos. I bounce off the walls as soon as springtime starts happening. I have so much energy, I don't even know what to do.
You're one of those people that most of us can't stand, the Energizer Bunny.
Yeah, that's
like,
what I do.
Okay.
But
plug her into the wall outlet. What for? She needs to burn off some juice, okay?
But I'm a spring baby, though. I was born in April, so that's my time. I like warm weather. I'm a warm weather person.
Yeah.
And you know what? I've said this before many times. One of my favorite things about Chicago is that because the warm weather season is relatively short, Chicagoans live like it is the last day on earth. As soon as it gets warm, I love when people are like knocking snow off of outdoor furniture and sitting outside and grilling outside and all that. I love that about Chicago and Chicagoans. That's my favorite thing that I noticed as soon as I arrived here.
The spring fever sign is when, for no reason, every street you come to is backed up with traffic. Because everybody on weekends, it's like, okay, I've got to get out of the house.
Mm.
I'm just going to take a cruise. I don't care where I'm going. I'm just going.
I don't think I've ever done understand that.
You've never noticed it?
No.
No, I've never noticed that.
No, I just see traffic always.
I know. No, I was going to say, it's always traffic.
No. The first nice spring weekend, just check the traffic out. It will be in places you normally don't see heavy traffic.
Okay.
There's heavy traffic. Because
okay.
people, it's just, you know, got to get out of the house.
All right, I'll be looking
can't deal with this anymore.
I've never noticed that. I mean,
no.
But I tend to just kind of walk everywhere or cab it. I'm usually on foot as much as possible. I'm on foot, so I don't necessarily notice traffic a ton.
And if I'm on my motorcycle, I'm illegally lane splitting, so I don't really notice traffic.
What's
either.
Lane splitting? Where you drive down in between the cars?
Oh, yeah.
I'm so nervous for you doing that.
I am too. But traffic's infuriating. And most cops have told me it's safer for you to not be going bumper to bumper in traffic
on a motorcycle,
pulling the clutch in and out. Yeah, it just if you ride the shoulder real slow, we're not going to pull you over.
I believe that. I also think there's a bit of a depth perception issue. If you're in a car and you have a motorcycle in front of you and then another car, it's very difficult to tell how far you are from that motorcycle back tire.
Yeah, it's nerve wracking.
So, well, now that we've solved all of those problems and talked about the weather,
let's
take a little break. When we come back, we're going to be talking politics with our good friend Rex Hupke because we have so much to discuss this week because, holy moly, someone was not listening to his handlers, I got to say. All right, we'll be back in just a bit. 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth hanging with you till 2 o'clock before we turn things over to Dave Plyer. How's it going? Thanks for being with us tonight. We have so much to talk about on the show tonight, and we cannot possibly end this week and step into the week to come without, this week in particular, without talking to our very, very good friend, Rex Hupke. Hi, Rex. How are you?
Hey. Good. How are you doing?
Good. Oh, my gosh. What a week that we have had in the political world. So as unofficial official political correspondent of this here show, I'm sure there's much to discuss. But let's just start at the obvious place. Trump not listening to handlers yet again.
Yeah. He's gone rogue. I think he is rogue. The whole thing. I didn't think we'd ever find someone who would make Sarah Palin seem quaint by comparison. But here we are.
Well, and it's like we've said this before. We said this a couple weeks ago. It's like he keeps topping himself. And indeed, he has topped himself again. And in this one, I mean, but we've heard this before. A lot of people said, oh, this is the one. He will be out. No more after this. But then he keeps going, keeps polling favorably. But this week, he said some very unfortunate, in my opinion, comments about prohibiting Muslim people from entering this country under any circumstances that were met with quite a bit of shock and dismay. Even from people in his own party were going, hey, whoa, guy, reel it in. So I think a lot of people are saying, hey, you know what? I think he may have really done it this time. And we see in polling numbers, we see Ted Cruz suddenly leading today in Iowa and surging into 31% to Trump's 21%. So do we think that's just one poll showing that, or do we think this is where the tide is turning?
Well, Donald Trump thinks it's just one poll, that's for sure. He said, he tweeted, about 6 hours ago, he said, don't trust Des Moines Register poll, biased towards Trump.
He points
to a CNN Iowa poll that has him up 33-20 over Cruz. So,
all right.
You know, everything. But, you know, it's just in perfect keeping with Trump. It's just, you know, nothing bad is ever right.
Yeah.
You know, and only the things that are good are right. And it's so, who knows. But
I'm going to apply that strategy to my life and see what happens. I'm just going to deny things.
Working fairly well for him in a certain sense.
Yeah, the rent's due. No, it's not. The rent's due. No, that's a conspiracy against Guth. The rent's paid. No, it's not. Yes, no.
Yeah.
I'm just going to do that in my life. See what happens.
Just insist. No, you're wrong.
You're wrong. It's going to work out. I'm just going to insist on all kind of things and just see how it works for me. Well, he also, you mentioned his tweet, he also got into it on Twitter this week with a Saudi prince, Alawi bin Talal, who is one of the wealthiest people in the entire world, and who, as a lesser known fact, is also, I think, the second largest shareholder of Twitter. So if you're going to get into a Twitter fight with somebody, he's probably not a good one to pick.
You can find your mic all of a sudden cut.
Yeah, at the real Donald has been given away to some kid somewhere. Nope, not you anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be fantastic for everyone. But he has no fear, that's for sure. He'll go after anybody. And he said something about the prince. I think he called him Dopey and said something about him using his daddy's money.
Which is kind of ironic, given. It reminded me of, there was an Onion headline. It was right after 9/11, and it was Bush and Osama bin Laden on the cover of the Onion, and it said something. The headline was something like, "Grown-up rich kids square off on world stage," or something like that. It was kind of the same thing applies.
It's good to see the rich struggling against each other and as we sit back and weep.
And weep openly, right. Well, so, I mean, it's been what I think is really interesting is that there's been so much, oh, my God, Trump happening, you know, on one side or the other, because he is kind of this larger-than-life figure that I think, or at least I fear anyway, a lot of people have not been paying as close of attention to the other candidates in that party is certainly what it seems to be the case. Because I think a lot of people even people that are highly, highly opposed to Trump know quite a bit about him and where he stands on things generally. So it seems like people are not as able to answer those questions for other candidates. So as we see this in this Iowa poll, we see Cruz suddenly, polling a little bit higher. I think people kind of anecdotally know little bits and pieces, but don't seem to know quite as much about where he stands on things because he's just not as vocal. Also, he's not as, provocative with every time he opens his mouth.
Yeah, no, he's not. And he has been fiendishly clever in how he's handled things because he's sort of embraced, he kind of hugged Donald Trump and was very careful, even when others were criticizing him, not to directly criticize him. And then in the meantime, he's been courting, a lot of other people who maybe didn't like Trump or weren't sure about Trump. And he's been building a very strong, very, very strong ground game. His super PAC, that's a ton of money. Mm-hmm. So he's actually, he's in a really good position right now. And frankly, is frightening because more than any of them, honestly, he terrifies me. I think he's a really, he is Trump without the all the bombast and stuff, but when you really look closely at his policies and his the ways that he thinks about things, there's not that much difference. Frankly, it's just that he's sneakier about it. Trump is in your face, and Cruz is standing behind the curtain. And then the difference is that Trump, I still don't think, stands much of a chance of actually winning the nomination. But Cruz, on the other hand, is going to find himself. He's going to be positioned fairly well to sneak in and possibly grab things, which will be interesting.
Which would be interesting. I mean, it really would. And I said this before, too, but it seems like, and the thing, this always worries me, but especially in election years, I am so concerned about anecdotal decision or, anecdotal evidence and decision making, particularly email forwards. I cannot say, I could write an entire book of everything that is wrong with email forwards, but yet people, I probably got, 40 of them today, 25 or 30 of them were probably political in nature.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so concerned about that because they're spread from relatives and from, friends, and you get these, but they're just so factually inaccurate. And I'm always the jerk in the family that's going, what, hold up. And I'll hit reply all because I really feel a responsibility as a journalist to not spread misinformation and to correct it when I find it. And so I'll always hit reply all. And of course, that's 400 people, right? And you go, you're like, hey, well, hold up. Actually, this picture is 5 years old. It wasn't taken this week, just as a point of clarity. And also the quote is this, not this. And then everyone says, accuses me of spin. And I say, just Google it. It's all good. But I put this on Facebook, in the last week. I said, there has been the strategy of people that do not like Trump of just saying, let's ignore him and he'll go away. Clearly that has not worked.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of people have said, let's not give him any attention and nothing will happen. Well, that's absolutely not working. So what I said is, you know, I personally do not agree with what he said about barring people from entering this country. That's my personal opinion. Everyone is entitled to theirs, and that's fine. And we welcome thoughtful discussion here on this show. And so I put on Facebook, I said, you know, if you are outraged by that, if you are offended by that, it's not enough to ignore him. You need to correct misinformation when you see it and when you hear it, and you need to encourage, you know, actively support the candidates you do want to win. And I think, you know, for candidates, I think a thing that a lot of people identify with on Trump is that the quote unquote real talk, and I'm doing the air quotes here, but the real talk, you know, he's such a straight shooter. He's not in the political machine. So I think, I mean, if I were working on someone's campaign right now, I would encourage them to play up the areas outside of politics they have worked in to kind of show that they have, you know, been in other areas too. And I mean, frankly, like, let's take a look at his, you know, his like business track record. For the thing people hold so dear is that he's such an outsider to the political machine. And yet he's filed so many bankruptcies. I think it's probably close to more than any other, you know, his casinos have been Chapter 11 more than probably any U.S. corporation. And so it's like the thing we hold dear is actually quite flawed. And I think we need to be really aggressive about talking about that.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And you talk about that. That same theme often, I think, which is good. I mean, the idea of you know, not just buying the information that's spun out there and not just accepting it or nodding along or whatever, but trying to verify things and be open to the fact that, you know, something that you're told may in fact not be true. But the problem with him, specifically with Trump, and there was a great Washington Post story this week, really fascinating about one of the main Republican pollsters, Frank Luntz, who's a solid Republican conservative guy as you can find. I mean, he's on the team big time. Mm-hmm. And he took a bunch of Trump supporters and he put them through like this long process of, you know, interviews and you know, a group focus group kind of thing. And they would tell them all of these negative things, like what some of the stuff he just said, you know, stuff about the bankruptcy, stuff about this. And they liked him more and more the more negative stuff that they told him. And this is not, you know, this wasn't spun negative. This was factual negative things about him. And what Frank Luntz in the article is quoted, and he's just absolutely baffled. He's like, this makes no sense.
None
whatsoever.
Any other
candidate would be destroyed by now. He's like, and he doesn't mean in the campaign. He means in this focus group. He's like, if you had done this with anybody else, these people would hate him. And he's like, but they don't. And so, it's the only thing that I think is what we overlook is that these people that we're talking about who support him so strongly, that's a very small group of people in the grand scheme of things. And it's certainly not enough to win. I don't think it's enough to win the nomination, and I certainly not enough to win the presidency. So, I mean, that's where it gets overblown because we see these people quoted and they're saying ridiculous things or that, you know, you see the big crowds at his events and stuff like that. But, you know, that is impressive on its face, but it's not enough still to actually demonstrate that you have a coalition big enough to win an election.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, hold that thought. Hold that thought. Sure. We got to take a little break. We got to check in with news and all that good stuff. But when we come back, we are talking with the unofficial official political correspondent here of this show, Rex Hupke from the Chicago Tribune. We're talking all about all things political that happened in this last week, because holy moly, there are sure a lot of them. We'll be right back in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth. Thanks for being with us this fine evening. Feels like springtime out there. I love it. I love it so much. But it is not. It is near the end of the year as we step into an election year, as a matter of fact. And so that brings us to our good friend Rex Hupke. He is the unofficial unofficial, official political correspondent of this show. That title changes every time I say it, Rex. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Or you're welcome, right? Either one. Well, so we have been talking about Trump because he has kind of hogged a lot of headlines this week. But let us be fair a little bit. And is it just me or does it seem like things are a bit quiet on the Dem side this week?
Yeah. I mean, there's just been some, but largely because of Trump, there's been so much going on over there that honestly, you wouldn't know there was a Democratic primary happening at the same time. And frankly, I keep saying that if Trump decides to splinter off, as he started hinting at again this week, then I think Hillary Clinton could just take the rest of the year off and just wait for the announcement.
Just kind of kick back.
He didn't really do anything. So. Or Bernie Sanders, I guess, just to be fair to the Bernie Sanders folks. But,
sure, sure.
But yeah, no, it's not a lot happening over there. And that's a shame. You know, I mean, really, like we should be hearing more about that. I have said in columns, and I personally feel like Hillary Clinton is far from an ideal candidate. And I think a lot of things that should be answered. And I don't feel like she's being tested very well in the primary, frankly, because people love Bernie Sanders, and I think he's a very smart guy. And in a lot of instances, I think he talks more sense than anybody else. But at the same time, I don't think he's going to win. And so I think the whole Democratic primary kind of is coasting along without a whole lot of attention going that way, because it's just not that exciting.
Okay, I have to tell you.
I shouldn't say that. I mean, that sounds bad.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. I know what you mean.
That's where we are, I'm afraid. So.
Yeah. So I have to tell you about something very disturbing that I heard. You know, I'm the queen of the overheards. I'm so good at eavesdropping, and I'm always tweeting the overheards. There was one I heard this week.
You do that a lot.
There was one I heard this week that I couldn't even, and my phone was dead, too, so I didn't end up tweeting it. But I was like, what did I just hear? There were two women walking on the sidewalk near me. And one of them said, and I don't know what the, you know, context of the conversation was, because I just kind of heard this one piece as we were passing, you know, as like they were passing me and, you know, we were all kind of going the same direction, blah, blah. Anyway, one of them said to the other, oh, but I love Bernie Sanders. He was so funny on Saturday Night Live. And I was horrified. And I kind of turned around and gave her a look like, what? Huh? And she wasn't looking up at me. And so I just kept going. But I was like, oh, no, people think, oh, no, that wasn't him. That was Larry David. That wasn't Bernie Sanders.
Close enough, whatever.
But that's a little horrifying to think that people, that parody would stick in someone's mind. I mean, never mind not being able to tell the difference between Larry David and Bernie Sanders. But that made me even think about when Tina Fey was being Sarah Palin.
Right.
A few years ago, did that contribute to the overall perception of Sarah Palin?
Yeah, I'm sure it did, because we do get, I mean, the thing that, and I have to kind of remind myself of this a lot too, because I pay so much attention to this stuff and I'm kind of dug into it a bit, but most people, and this isn't a knock at all on people, but most people right now are paying zero attention to all of this. I mean, Trump has gotten an outsized amount of exposure and attention just because of who he is and the kinds of things he's doing. But even with him, there is a huge percentage of the population that is paying no attention to this. And they wouldn't know Bernie Sanders from Larry David. And, you know, they still have kind of a generic concept of Hillary Clinton and a, you know, vague concept of who these other Republican candidates are and stuff. So, you know, the people that really pay attention in the primaries are the more kind of serious politics followers and you know, that sort of thing. So that doesn't surprise me at all. And it'll be interesting how this all will shift later next year once things actually get more serious and you have people finally tuning in. They will have missed a lot of this excitement and drama and whatnot. So anyway, that doesn't surprise me that you hear somebody saying that. And even going, I mean, geez, you know, going into the election too, there's going to be a certain percentage of the population that's going to vote that way. You know, I loved him on Saturday Night Live. I cast the vote. So what can we do? That's the way our system works.
So do you think that, you know, it was a controversy that we talked about just a few weeks ago when Trump was on Saturday Night Live as a host. And there was a lot of conversation around that, and you and I talked about that. Do you think that the comment that he made this week, do you think that if he would have said that prior to being on Saturday Night Live, that he still would have been invited?
You know what, that's a great question. I honestly don't know, because they got a lot of heat for having him on even then, just based on the things he'd said about immigrants and to be already at that point, prior to this other stuff. I would like to think that, yes, that would prevent him from going. That would make them drop him. But at the same time, I mean, the media, not to knock my own business, but they're just feeding off this guy, especially the networks, the TV. I mean, the CNN and the news, you know, the 24-hour news networks, they're lapping it up. If you look right now at the promo for the debate coming up next week on Tuesday, it's like a boxing match promo. I mean, it's just really, it's over the top, and it's really bizarre. So, you know, I think I keep hearing, especially since his comments about banning all Muslims from entering for a while, that a lot more people are starting to come forward and say, look, you know what, the media needs to just lay off him. They need to step away. There was somebody who said, I think it was a former CNN person maybe, who said that, you know, the media needs to take a one-week break on Donald Trump. And and I think, well, yeah, that's a good idea, and it will never happen. I mean, it's just
never.
There's money involved here, and it's not just decisions based on what's really best for our democracy. It's what's really best for drawing in viewers, and that's why Trump continues to dominate. He's on every show. They let him just call in instead of actually coming in, and it's because people tune in. So, yeah, I would like to think that SNL would have, at this point, the pressure would have been too intense. They would have had to drop it. But I by no means think that's a definite.
Sure. I don't pretend to speak for Lorne Michaels, so who knows?
Right, yeah. It's tough. And again, I mean, if you're producing a show, it's not, especially if it's not a news show, and you want to get ratings.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah, like what's the moral line there? I don't know. I've had a lot of people out there.
You know what I was thinking this week? The gym that I go to, they're very clear that you may not change the televisions. They have a very tight schedule of what television will be on what channel when and blah, blah. And if you don't like it, you can get on one of the little treadmills with the little TV and just put in your earbuds and go away. So, but there are three big TVs right up front in the room, so you can't not see them. And I was thinking about it this week because, in particular, there was a Fox News channel on, there was a CNN, and then there was, I think, a NBC or CBS, or maybe MSNBC. And it was so funny it was so interesting to watch the kind of the lower third of the screen of how the same stories were described so differently on these three different networks. And I started thinking about what a fascinating job it must be for a visual creator of some kind, of graphic designer, to make these promo graphics for every story, particularly on Fox, because they're very aggressive. They're very patriotic looking. The Trump graphic was so interesting. And it was this very aggressive thing that kind of shot out from the screen and bum, 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 and kind of went back away. And then the other, I look a TV over, and it's just kind of a little line underneath it that said Trump said the following. And it was so interesting how things are played on different channels. And so I was thinking about that in particular thing with how, not only how it's played, but even just visual cues that different networks offer.
Oh yeah. No, they have a brand basically. And so they fit everything to kind of go with their brand. And of course, Fox is generally quite a bit leaning to the right, and MSNBC is leaning to the left, and CNN is, I don't know what they're doing, but they're
right. You know what? I just looked up at the TV here in the station. We have a few screens, and there's a CNN screen on. And I just looked up right as the GOP debate ad is on, in which it's just like face, one after another. And then, da-da-da, you know, the CNN, the debate, boom, followed by an ad for a boxing match.
It's a
pay-per-view on Xfinity. There it is.
Yeah.
Perfectly timed.
And the sound is brilliant, too. You know, it's like, boom. And, you know,
it's very like Jurassic Park kind of music, yeah.
Right. Bush. Crew. It's just sad. I mean, it just shows what we've done with all this. Like, no wonder there's a reality star who's leading the one party's polls.
I know. Yeah, there's that. There's that. Well, you know what? We got to take a little break. Will you stick with us a little bit longer, Rex?
Yeah. Sure,
all right, good. Because I still want to talk about Paris, because that's a big piece we have yet to touch on. And the everything going there with climate, I think, is very significant. So we got to talk about that. So we're going to take a little break. What's that?
It's a hoax.
Oh, of course.
It's all a hoax.
There's always someone saying that everything's a hoax. Anyway, we're going to be right back in just a bit with our good friend Rex Hupke here on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth. Thanks for being with us tonight. We're going to let this one play for a minute. It's a good jam. Producer Shane is feeling this song. I can tell in the booth. He's rocking out. There it is. All right, my friends, we have been talking with our good friend Rex Hupke. He's the official, unofficial political correspondent here of this show. We're always happy to have him on. You can read everything he does at ChicagoTribune.com. You can also follow him on Twitter, because he is damn funny on Twitter, I got to say. All right, so we have talked about the GOP side. We talked about the Dem side. But, you know, I want to kind of set all of the, election stuff aside and talk about Paris, because this very historic decision, this deal has been reached in Paris, in which 195 nations have agreed to take some drastic measures to help stave off major environmental issues and help curb climate change, which we're already experiencing. And that's a big deal. And I think I got the impression anyway, just kind of anecdotally looking on social media, that it certainly seemed like people did not quite grasped how big a deal this was, because I think we have gone at this so many times, and we have had restrictions that we have enacted upon ourselves or had put on us, but yet it's exempted a lot of developing nations.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that's the biggest thing here. I think people on both sides of the issue are going to kind of debate is it great? Is it sort of great? Is it not great? I mean, you know, the exact, whether it does enough good or it doesn't do enough good. But I think what's important here, though, is getting everybody to the table, and at least getting everybody to acknowledge and take a solid first step in the right direction, and in a sort of unified direction. Because if you don't have that, I mean, one of the big complaints that you hear from people who say we shouldn't be worried so much about climate change as well, what good does it do for us in the U.S. to curb emissions if China and India and places overseas are not doing the same? Because, you know, it isn't just our air. I mean, it's everybody. And while that argument doesn't quite track anyway, really. But this at least is a step that kind of gets everybody moving in the right direction, and it shows commitment not just from us, not just from a smattering of other countries, but a lot of countries. It is a starting point, I guess. I mean, and a strong one. I mean, this is not nothing. You know what I mean? This is not just like a nod and a handshake. I mean, there's substance to this, at least. Mm-hmm. And I thought, actually, there was a comment that somebody from an advocacy group made that I thought was interesting. And it's a little, I mean, again, this is a climate advocacy group, so it's a little pessimistic in a sense about the accord. But it says that this agreement won't save the planet, not even close, but it's possible that it saves the chance of saving the planet.
Wow.
Which I thought was interesting. So in other words, you know, this particular activist doesn't think it goes far enough, obviously. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think the point that he makes there is good, that, you know, this is okay. At least now we've got traction. Mm-hmm. and we can take it from here and then move as things progress, you know, see how they're going, keep things in check, speed things up as they're needed, hopefully, and get better buy-in. So, yeah, I think it's a big deal.
Yeah, I do too. And I think it'll be interesting to see how the markets react to it, because, you know, in my mind, that's going to be a signal to a lot of like financial implication, right? The financial implication will be big to shift away from traditional fuel sources and energy sources and go to more, you know, low carbon alternatives, you know, to invest in wind energy and solar rather than, you know, coal and oil and things like that. So I think that'll be interesting to kind of watch the markets and how those play too, because I think there'll be a big, like a business, not just shift, but I think there are implications there too. And I think it'll be interesting to see how this manifests in all the different countries, particularly, I mean, obviously here, because this is here we are, right? This is our country. But I think it'll be interesting. I mean, for so long, we've put a lot of conversation on the individual and the household and this kind of plastic must be in the blue bin by the curb and da da da. But yeah. I mean, we have it, what pains me is that the stuff we put in our recycling bins is all this excessive stuff from companies. And I think we've long kind of let companies skate a bit and really only punish the most severe of environmental infractions and not done enough really for, you know, when you order, you know, the littlest thing and you get 15 layers of plastic and it's shrink wrapped and there's styrofoam around that in a box and another box and all this crap, you know. I think there little things like that are going to go a long way, but I think, you know, these big measures are huge and very exciting, frankly.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. I think the leadership, we've got to see it coming politically and this kind of an agreement, but the companies are going to really play a huge role in this, and in part because there's a lot of politicians who will take their cues from the companies because there's a
absolutely
lot of
absolutely, yeah.
And I think there's been some positive signs on that front anyway, of even in the face of opposition, political opposition in this country, you've seen a number of companies that have started to take this more serious, in part because they realize, even just from even if they're not doing it for the right moral reasons, they're doing it for marketing reasons.
Yeah, the consumers want that for sure.
Right, exactly, and that means something. So yeah. even if what they're doing are just baby steps, at least it's something. And once they get on board, then it'll be the dominoes will really start falling, I think.
Here's hoping. All right, my friend. Well, we're already out of time. I wish we could just talk all night because there's always so much to cover when you join us. So I always appreciate it. We will.
I'm always happy to be on. Thank you.
Excellent. We'll talk with you next time. Everybody follow him on Twitter, Rex Hupke. You also read him at ChicagoTribune.com. All right, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, I'm going to get you to news and all that. And then we're going to go to tech headlines. So stick around. 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth hanging with you till 2 o'clock when we turn things over to Dave Plyer. Thanks for being with us tonight on this downright balmy night, I gotta say. It's in fact warming up as we speak, which is hella exciting if you ask me, because
yeah, I don't like it.
I know you don't. I know, but it's warm and it's not a polar vortex, and so I'm on board with that. But right now, my friends, it is shortly after midnight, and so that means it is time for some tech headlines. We should get a jingle for that. That's good. I like that. Good job.
Yeah, I pre-produced that. It took me an hour.
Good work. Nice. Well, there's lots of stuff always happening in the tech world, so we're always happy to talk about them. But as a transition from what we were just talking about with our good friend Rex Hupke of the Chicago Tribune, the official, unofficial political correspondent of this show, we have to talk. We mentioned this briefly with him, but a very interesting thing happened. Donald Trump this week got into a big Twitter fight with a Saudi prince. The guy's name is Prince Al-Walid bin Talal. He is one of the wealthiest people in the world. His fortune is worth about $32 billion. The guy is quite wealthy. He's also the second majority stakeholder in Twitter. So if you're going to get into a Twitter battle, maybe not someone who owns part of Twitter. But
pro
none.
Tip.
Yeah, I'm here to help, right?
Social media expert Amy Guth, pro tip.
Right. So they got into this big spat, and it was so funny to watch because it was like watching a child, really. At one point, it started because the prince tweeted about, hey, he said, "You are a disgrace not only to the GOP, but to all America." He also tweeted, "Withdraw from the U.S. presidential race as you will never win." So Trump fires back, and he calls the guy dopey.
Sure,
which seemed like a weird response to that, given some of the things Trump said. Dopey is what he came up with. And it got, you know, just kind of went from there. And he referred to the prince as using his, quote, daddy's money to control U.S. politicians, things like that. It was so childish, I thought. I think Twitter spats generally are quite childish, but this one seemed very silly.
The entire time I'm reading this back and forth, you know what I'm thinking of? The Donald Trump SNL. Where he's supposedly live tweeting the dinner between the SNL cast members. And like they break down the fourth wall and they kind of break out of character.
Yep.
And Cecily Strong is a loser. And it was just, you could, the entire time I'm reading this spat, it's exactly what I'm thinking of. He's just such a child.
Yeah, I mean, I would hate to be his handler. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Because it would be a very frustrating job to keep that guy kind of reined in. Actually, it might be a very easy job because he's not going to listen to a word you say anyway.
Do we know who his PR firm is? Who his publicist
is? I don't.
Is?
We could probably figure it out. I've never really looked, to be honest with you. So that was a thing that happened. Also, though, another Trump thing that was in the tech world this week, there was a Facebook post that cost an ACLU official a job.
Okay.
So the co-chair of the Colorado Springs chapter of the ACLU stepped down after posting a statement to Facebook that mentioned shooting Donald Trump supporters.
Not the best time to go off and tweet something like that.
And right there in Colorado Springs. Like, it seems a bit insensitive to be doing that anywhere, but especially there. So the post said that Trump supporters should be told something like, I'll have to shoot you before Election Day. And so that person has stepped down.
I'd assume that they would. That's like going back to Chernobyl and saying, anybody need a microwave?
Terrible. The individual said it was intended totally as a joke. They're taking stuff out of context. This is smear politics.
Where's the context?
I don't know. I got to say that. I just don't think you can make jokes like that.
No.
Any kind of, you know, shooting
timing.
Joke. Yeah, no. Mm-mm. I don't think that's a good one. That's not a good one. That's not a good joke to make.
No.
I mean, I've even been a little conscious lately of saying when people go, hey, I've got an idea. All right, shoot. You know, I've even been conscious of that, of not saying shoot or yeah, fire when ready. Like
right.
Even those kind of things, I just don't think you can joke about those in this climate
can't.
Right now. It's too widespread, and I think too many lives have been touched by gun violence. You can't screw around with that.
I know.
Somebody just heard me say that and said, oh, that's PC crap. You know what? Here's my challenge to you. Anytime you think that it is problematic to be politically correct, change being PC, change that phrase with treating people with respect and see how far it gets you.
I just look at this man as an adult having probably a pretty good understanding of worldly events, being in Colorado Springs, seeing a Planned Parenthood clinic get massacred.
Yeah.
And what makes you think, okay, this is a good idea. I'm going to tweet this from Colorado Springs. You're an adult.
You're getting mad in the booth.
I don't know what else to say.
Getting mad in the booth. David Jennings, what do you think about that?
I just walked in the middle of it, so I'm not sure where we're going. So give me a clue.
We're talking about this Facebook post that cost an ACLU co-chair a job. So the ACLU co-chair in Colorado Springs posted something about having to shoot all the Trump supporters before Election Day.
Oh, that.
That,
yeah.
Right. We're talking about that.
Okay.
And so I feel that was an insensitive thing to say.
Stupid is as stupid does.
We have all said stupid crap out of context.
But there was no thought devoted to opening the mouth and making that statement. I mean, our culture.
I just feel like there in particular.
That was just way out of line.
Yeah.
Just too far out of line. And they should have known better.
That town is still grieving what happened.
Yeah. They should have known better. Number two, you know, we live in a culture that has gotten not just coarser over time. The coarseness is reflected in people's willingness to say things that would have required several seconds of pause between thought, filter, mouth.
And
now it's just thought, mouth.
And as you start talking, there are nonverbal cues you get from people. And you can tell within a couple of words, your tone, your body language, all those things, you can tell how your words are landing. But if you're doing that from behind a screen, you cannot tell that.
No, you can't. But there is still that, you know, practice some restraint of pen, tongue, and fingers on keyboard. It might save you losing your job.
Well, I think that's good advice just for life. I think practicing restraint generally,
well,
not always, but generally.
Yeah, it's just, you know, certain people's political supporters should be shot. No, wrong. Really wrong.
You know, how about not saying anyone should be shot? Because, in fact, nobody should be shot.
No.
So there's that.
No one should be.
Nobody in the world should be shot.
And lately we have had far too many instances of someone with a cause that they think they have shooting people. And it's like, hold time. Wait. All right? No. Humor, sarcasm, whatever. I get it. All right? But sometimes there are limits. And there are times when you just don't go there. So they lost their job. Well, you know, you opened your mouth, you inserted your foot. Congratulations.
I mean, hell, if I said it, I would lose my job.
Probably.
And I'm not in I don't have the social standing that ACLU does.
No.
I'm in a completely different realm.
And that was just way, way off base.
Yeah, I think you have a certain amount of responsibility to what you say if you work there. I mean, I've long said,
this case, they weren't speaking just for themselves.
Right.
They were speaking for an organization. And, you know?
And even if you're not doing it through an official channel, you are still an employee of that organization. And that's why I cannot stand when people put that thing on their Twitter bio that says retweets are not endorsements. A, that's not legally binding. That absolutely means
that's
nothing.
A joke.
It's a joke, but some companies require it, which is absolutely foolish. And I would encourage everyone to push back on that because it's not legally binding. And in fact, if you retweet somebody, you are doing so with a purpose.
Yeah.
You're not just randomly
because you
want to share that.
You want to share what they've said.
Right.
The same thing if you share a post on Facebook. You're not doing it because
you are sharing information for good, for better or worse.
Unless you make a statement regarding what it is or why you're choosing to share it. Facebook, you can do that. Twitter, you can't.
You can. You can do the quote tweet,
okay.
I do that with, when I get, if I get.
I'm not an expert Twitter user.
Well, I am, and I'm here to help.
Thank you.
There you go. Well, I think that, you know, I tend to do it with, you know, if someone's, like a friend is doing a project, I'll quote tweet and say, hey, well, look, you know, hey, look what so-and-so's doing. If it's, as I have received, as many people do, have received, you know, particularly volatile comments on Twitter, if they're particularly abusive or threatening, I'll usually throw that person to the court of public opinion, retweet them, and add something like, I was going to talk about online abuse tonight on the air anyway. Or, hey, everyone, it looks like so-and-so has something to say.
It's like, I have some new friends.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to just, like, you know, make cockroaches scatter by turning lights on sometimes.
Yeah, just hold me. Make people accept.
Accountable is really the word.
When you decide to say something, just remember you own it.
Yeah, absolutely. And
you
look,
completely own it.
And
any and all ramifications from making that statement.
Not just talking.
You're responsible
not
for.
Not just talking. If you and I leave here right now and go across the street to the Billy Goat and get in a bar fight, it's not going to be two individuals started a bar fight. It's going to be two WGN employees. You're always representing your organization, whether you like it or not.
Yes,
you know,
and
when you're off the clock.
And the chubby black guy would get his butt handed to him by the self-defense specialist.
I've got your back, David Jennings.
No, you don't want to do that.
No, I don't mean you and I would get into a bar fight together. I mean, we would go.
You'd fight other people.
We'd
in
fight
the
other people
oh,
in the bar.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
No,
like
let
a WGN versus BBM SmackDown. Like an Anchorman. You know what I'm talking about?
Like Radio Fight
Let's
Club.
Let's get ready to rumble!
I don't know who I'd fight. A lot of people have wanted, because Patty Vasquez also does martial arts, so a lot of people have wanted us to do Radio Fight Club.
Sure.
Ooh, that could be interesting.
Nope. On that note, we're going to break. We will be right back in just a moment with more tech headlines on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth hanging out. It's after midnight, so we're talking tech headlines because there are so darn many of them to get into. There are several stories, though, spinning around the leader of Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, CEO. He, of course, became a father last week, and he has posted a picture of changing a diaper of his little tiny child named Max. She's darn cute. That photo, as of Saturday afternoon, had 1.7 million likes on it. I guess if you invent Facebook, you can do stuff like that. But his caption said, one more down, thousands to go of the diaper.
You think he plants those likes, Amy? You think
he's Mark Zuckerberg.
He doesn't need to.
Are you sure Mark Zuckerberg doesn't plant those
lights? I'm not sure, but I bet he doesn't have to.
Because I took a picture of a chicken parmesan sausage from Lynx in Wicker Park today,
and
it didn't get anything. What's he doing that I'm not?
I think you have to be a bajillionaire.
His last name, if your last name was Zuckerberg, you might have had a very different outcome. A hugely different outcome.
So he was... Right before the birth of his child, though, he was in the news a bit because he and his wife, Dr. Priscilla Chan, they said, you know, in honor of the upcoming birth, we're going to give away most of our fortune, about 90% of it, which was a lovely idea. And they said it was a new initiative to advance human potential and promote equality for all children in the next generation. The way the business was structured caught him a lot of grief on social media because it wasn't a straight up 501c3. It was an LLC corporation. He gave an explanation that actually, I think, made perfect business sense. And yet people were all over him, kind of calling him, you know, implying that he was doing something not necessarily fraudulent. But yeah, but kind of looking out for more self-interest than he was actually trying to do something charitable.
So he didn't follow the Bill Gates, Warren Buffett model
of giving it all away.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think he's been challenged by Warren Buffett to do so.
I think all of them have been challenged by Gates and Buffett to do so.
I would love to be challenged to give away my riches. I just need to acquire the riches first, and then I will gladly give it away. I'd be glad to.
I would love to be I'd love to be a fly on the wall to hear Buffett and Gates pitch Sam Walton's kids.
Wow.
Okay. That would be a very interesting conversation to eavesdrop on and to hear what their responses are.
Oh, to be a mouse in the corner for that.
Just to hear what they say and whether they'd be willing to do it or not. And if not, why? Because they truly are in a rather interesting position.
Mm-hmm.
They inherited it all.
Yeah, sure.
And it's just grown like wildfire since.
Certainly.
I'm jealous. I admit it. I'm jealous.
You know what? I'm all about living simply. I like to simplify my stuff.
I like to live simply, too. But
I would be a great rich person because I wouldn't be ostentatious about it.
Yeah, nobody says you can't live simply with a fat wallet.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, have a nice place to live.
Yeah.
Or two.
Or ten, whatever.
No entourage because it's like, you know, no, entourages are bad. People who have entourages usually wind up having problems. So no hangers-on.
No hangers-on, but I think you know who
Your family is.
I think it's perfectly fair to have a security person, though. Particularly if you're female.
If you're under the radar.
If you're under the radar, fine.
Yeah.
But like when you see a celebrity with a security person, I don't begrudge them that.
Oh no,
they're
not at
crazy
all.
Fans, particularly like in the Bieber Spears kind of realm. Like
female actresses, unfortunately.
Yeah, truly.
And then in some cases, male actors are followed by stalkers.
Right. Remember, like that thing that went on forever. That woman, like they kept breaking into David Letterman's house and all that kind of stuff. Like there's
and the one who most recently attacked Pauly Perrette from NCIS.
Oh, I didn't know that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't begrudge security to anybody who's in the public eye. Not at all. But back to Zuckerberg, shall we? He also, this week, because he's all about the news right now, he also posted in response to Trump's, even though he didn't mention him specifically, the timing indicated that it was basically in response to Trump's statement about preventing anyone who is Muslim from entering the country. Zuckerberg posted that, he said, look, all people are welcome on Facebook. It will always be a safe place. And he said, we will fight to protect your rights and create a peaceful and safe environment for you. And he really shared I thought it was one of the more personal posts. I think fatherhood is making him kind of a softy, right? Because he said, you know, even he said, like, you know, as a member of the Jewish community, my parents always taught me, you know, it was very important to stand up for groups being persecuted. And he rarely talks about anything connected to Judaism. And so I thought that was very interesting that he brought that up and he shared, you know, a very personal part of and talked about his parents and his upbringing. I thought it was a lovely post. I mean, I
think he was looking at the landscape and seeing what's been happening lately and recognized that someone needed to say something because it's gotten stupid. It's gotten beyond stupid.
Well, we are certainly in a moment of I believe, great Islamophobia. And
Intense. And I keep thinking about the two lines in the Star-Spangled Banner. Land of the free and the home of the brave.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. the time when you really need to walk as if is when times are tough. And times are tough, and what do we hear people doing? Walking like anything but the land of the free and the home of the brave. We've become the land of the fraidy cats and the chickens.
Okay, what? But to play devil's advocate a little bit, how do you tell somebody right now in this climate not to be afraid? Not to be somewhat afraid for your
safety. It's fine to be afraid, but I think when you start discriminating against groups of people, it's a
problem. We are a free society. And you know what? There is a price to having a free society.
Well, look.
Sometimes you're going to see things happen that are unpleasant. And you're going to see people in your midst who are going to do things that are detrimental to the community as a whole. That does not mean that you now turn around and decide, you know what? I'm willing to be less free, so I don't have to be afraid. It doesn't work.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair. I also see that when the narrative that we use around different types of crime is different for different people. I mean, we have seen this so much, and I'm not saying, quote, the media. I'm a member of it. And no one has ever influenced me or tried to push any sort of political agenda on me whatsoever in my entire career. I'm just saying, just anecdotally and on social media, the way people talk about different crimes, there's a big difference. There's a big difference if the crime is committed by a person of color versus a white guy. There's a huge difference in the way we talk about it. Jennings is just grinning over there. Anyway, we're off topic. We're going back to the Hupke segment. Let's go back to our tech headlines because there are indeed so many to go to. So we're going to take a little break, get you to news, do all that good stuff when we come back. Home. 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth hanging with you till 2 o'clock. Thanks for being with us. All right, my friends, we are taking the midnight hour to talk all about tech headlines, although we are you know, tangent prone as we do. It happens. We're all friends here, so we like to talk about all kind of things connected to these things. But I want to tell you about, if you are listening anywhere near Richmond, Virginia, I want you to go to Twitter right this minute and follow a Twitter account called Hidden RVA Cash, because this Twitter account is so interesting. They are, for the second year in a row, this person who claims to just be a good Samaritan who wants to give back is hiding wads of cash around Richmond and nearby areas and tweeting clues and photos, and people are going to find all this money. People are already finding it, which I think is fascinating.
Dear good citizen, how about doing this in Chicago? Because I know I know someone who'd really like to make a top flight movie.
Sure.
Who I know, and you know, I'd like to increase my financial status too.
Sure.
Is it you, David Jennings? Is it you that wants to make the movie?
No.
No.
That's Amy who wants to make the movie.
Okay.
That one. I got the cameras.
Yeah. No, who was that? When was that?
I remember there was somebody doing some like secret Santa sort of thing like that in Chicago a few years ago, but I don't recall all those details. But anyway, if you are near Richmond, Hidden RVA Cash is the Twitter account that is tweeting out all these clues. Go get you some of that, because I don't know how much money it is. But
road trip?
Nah, I'm good.
Okay.
Nah, I'm good. Other things in the technology world that are happening. There's an Instagram account. Well, two things we should mention about Instagram. One, Snapchat has just outranked Instagram as the quickest growing social media platform among millennial users, according to a study from Harvard University's Institute of Politics. They took that data then and sliced it up a bunch of different ways to look at how social media use in general kind of scales across race and gender and political affiliations. With Snapchat, the political affiliation was the most divided, like evenly split.
Okay.
And so that's the most bipartisan experience is going to be on Snapchat, which is interesting.
Wait a minute. They're breaking social media use down in terms of your politics?
As far as they can. Right.
Well, oh, Lord.
No, I think that's absolutely fair because, I mean, data won the last election, right?
Okay.
You know, so I think that's absolutely fair to do that.
So what else is in this?
Well, you know, they looked at it from race and gender and all those things, too. And for the most part, the one that was overwhelmingly female was Pinterest,
Okay.
Sure.
The others were still fairly even, but skewing mostly male.
Okay. What about a breakout on an ethnic basis? Or they haven't gone that far?
They haven't gone quite that far. They looked at kind of some general race, and it seemed like the, again, Snapchat had like kind of the most, like there was still some big disparity there, but one of the more even.
What about on an income basis? Have they done that?
I don't think. I'm sure someone has. I haven't looked at it. There's a really interesting one. The Emory University Social Media Lab has done a really interesting one. A while back, they did this. They took major, they did one for MLB, one for NFL, and one for NHL. And I think...
They're dot-com sites. Websites.
No, they looked at social media usage around all NFL teams. And then, so they compared both the fan mentions as well as the social media ability of the team's official accounts to see kind of how they land in different markets. Chicago was right in the middle of the football one. But I want to say it was like the Packers and the Patriots were at the top, which kind of made me cringe at first.
It makes plenty of sense. Hang on the Snapchat for a second there, because I remember a few months ago you were imploring on what Snapchat really is and how you could benefit from using Snapchat.
Yeah.
And I remember you posted like one Snapchat story or Snapchatted something, a picture.
I just feel like with social media, it's important to say yes and try and give it a fair shake and give it a whirl. And I think it's important to look at platforms and decide if it's right for you rather than just kind of say no from the start. A lot of people are uncomfortable being a student of anything, and they don't want to be in learn mode. They just want to have it mastered. So I was looking at Snapchat and trying to figure out how to make it work for me because it is so popular. And it just recently, in fact, kind of overtook Instagram, in this study that we were talking about. So I feel like, it's important to pay attention to it. Brands are paying attention to it. I mean, Hearst launched that, Snapchat-only publication on there called Sweet. It's kind of a lifestyle publication. The only place you can get it is through Snapchat. So it's interesting, right, what people are doing with it. And brands are paying attention to it.
Is there a paywall?
Mm-mm.
No paywall.
No, there's not.
How are they making money on it?
There's ads in it. There's brands that are paying to be there, things like that.
I could see something like Gooth Gauntlet very much benefiting from your Snapchat story.
Oh, that's a good idea.
You can put your Snapchat name out there, and you add your story on there, and you just show videos of these people going ham up and down Hubbard.
Can you say that on the radio?
Going
Whatever.
Ham.
Yeah.
Not in any specific context, but stumbling around all over the place.
Sure.
There's been very few
pictures of Gooth Gauntlet, because it's mostly Gooth Gauntlet, if you don't know, tweet after the show, because around this area there's lots of bars and stuff and people going crazy.
You need a Gooth Gauntlet correspondent who lives in Wrigleyville, okay?
During T-Box today?
Oh.
You could have gone
was that
crazy.
Today?
Yeah.
T-Box was today.
The one that happens down here, the Christmas crawl or whatever, last year, I distinctly recall this, last year sitting in this studio watching a Santa and a reindeer break up leaning against this window, and I laughed so hard I about cried. The Santa had broken down to the point of he had on the Santa pants and the boots, suspenders, who knows where the jacket was, because he just had on like the white undershirt and then the Santa hat.
And this is when it was zero outside?
Oh, so cold.
He was business casual Santa.
Business casual Santa. Weekend Santa.
Yeah.
The reindeer, she essentially had on like brown leggings and a kind of brown sweatshirt and had painted her face with more like a cat than a reindeer, but she put on like a little red nose and then put whiskers on her son.
Reindeer don't have whiskers.
Don't have whiskers.
Yeah.
No. But then she had the headband with big antlers. But they had been clearly drinking for quite a long time because they were very, very stumbly and slurry. They were breaking up, leaning here against the window of the Allstate Showcase studio. And she was crying very hard, these audible, just heavy, heartbroken sobs, bless her heart. But she had all this makeup on. And so it was just smeary and gross and terrible. I mean, I almost went out there and just like.
You should have turned the mic on that hangs outside that window and tried to intervene.
No.
Like a Dr. Phil kind of thing.
You love to court disaster, don't you?
I don't think so. I didn't burn my apartment down, David Jennings, if that's what you're insinuating.
No.
I didn't do it myself.
Oh, Lord.
No, I
can
prove anything.
Ooh.
No, I am not going to intervene in any kind of drunken spat with anybody ever. That's not a good idea.
There's
really.
One thing I did see a couple of years ago that I haven't seen since, thank goodness. It's the thing that it's sort of like a trolley, but it's a lot smaller.
Oh, I know where you're going with this.
And the people who sit on either, it's like a bar,
mm-hmm.
and
I've
people pedal it.
Yeah.
I'm like, and I saw one rolling up Clark Street, and I'm like, oh no, this is such a bad idea.
You know, is it just a general rule, drinking and being on a mobile anything is a bad idea?
Yeah.
And I include anything with wheels.
I gave that up a long time ago.
And mobile devices.
Oh, yeah.
Don't be on those.
Drunk dialing is dangerous.
There is a product. If you Google the phrase Google goggles, just go search that.
Okay.
It is a plug-in you can put on your Gmail, and you set the time. And it says, basically, if I try to send an email after X o'clock, you will stop me by doing the following. And it sends you a fairly simple math problem to deal with. But you have to solve it in a certain amount of time. I think it's 40 seconds or something.
Or it shuts you out.
Or it'll say, no, we're going to save this as a draft. Why don't you go get a glass of water? It's very funny. I mean, it's kind of flip.
Oh.
So I wanted to write about it. And so I put it on my Gmail just so I could, you know, test it and see what it did. And it was quite funny because it would really say, no, seriously. Okay, one more try. And then it would say, no, why don't you get a glass of water and have a nap? And sometimes it would say, maybe two aspirin and sleep it off in the morning and have a Gatorade. And I was like not drunk during any time. But it really became a pain in the ass because, you know, you're up late doing some work and you're like, oh, crap, I have 19 times 48 is, and you'd sit there trying to, you know, figure out and do this math really quickly in your head while this counter, you know, this clock is like ticking down, which is not helpful, but it was very funny. So if you tend to get drunk and email people.
There is a calculator function on most smartphones. Could it save you some time?
Well, yeah, but then you got to get up and walk across the room and do all, you know, I wasn't sitting there with my phone. But anyway, it was it's an interesting product. And if you tend to get a couple cocktails in you and start emailing people.
Do people often do that? Do they drunk email?
I've gotten
often?
Some drunk emails before.
You have. Okay.
I've gotten some.
Drunk dialing.
You know where?
Drunk
sure.
emails. Oh,
I
yeah.
I did drunk e-intros a lot.
Drunk e-intros.
I think I.
Okay.
I probably have done a few in my life. Like, oh, you know who you should meet? You should meet so-and-so.
Oh, that.
That. Now, it's usually a good idea. I mean, actually, half of them are probably to you, Shane. Yeah. Oh, you should talk. Yeah, be on the show.
Oh, okay. Is that why? Okay.
No, right. I kid. But I tend to get a lot of those from people like, I'm sitting here talking to so-and-so, and you should meet because she just said the following thing, and you guys would be good friends, or she should be on your show, or you should interview her for this, or whatever.
I was trying to figure out why you sent me last weekend, just like your Walgreens cashier, why you thought that would be a good guest on the show.
Shut up.
He introed me with this
Shut
Walgreens
up.
Cashier.
Quit lying here on the air in front of all these nice people.
Who is that, Amy?
He lies.
I love it.
He lies. We're going to take a little break. A little bit later in the show, we are talking all to these wonderful Chicago filmmakers who are making this very cool project that is comedy with a great cause. Stick around. We're going to talk to them after the 1 o'clock break. But more tech headlines. I can't even talk right now. More tech headlines when we come back here on 720 WGN. I think I've had enough. I might get a little drunk. 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth. Thanks for being with us tonight. With you about another hour. We'll turn things over to Dave Plyer at 2 o'clock. He's got a big show for you, so you definitely want to caffeinate and stay up for that. All good. Hey, so we've been talking about some tech headlines going on right now. And, of course, you know, it's very hard to separate technology from any other part of our lives right now. So we have been taking some detours and liberties, which it happens. But I also want to talk about there is an Instagram account that I think is really interesting. Because for as much as we talk about the larger, very horrific, you know, mass shootings that seem to happen just all too often in this country, there is an Instagram account that is devoted to chronicling where everyday violence happens, all kinds of violence, shootings certainly, but also muggings, sexual assault, domestic abuse, all kinds of things like that. And the account is at someplace else, put an underscore between someplace and else, someplace underscore else on Instagram. And they use Google, Google Street View to show, and they use all this crime data. And so some of it is kind of chilling and haunting because it's not crime scene photos at all. It'll be maybe an empty street and it will say, you know, a 10-year-old was shot here or it'll be the picture of a house and it'll say a woman was beaten to death by her husband here or something like that. And it's so chilling because it's if you didn't know what the account was about and you didn't read any of the captions, it just looks like kind of any place America. It looks like your own town. And it looks very kind of like the Lonely Planet kind of travel guide almost. But in fact, it's these really chilling things. And to illustrate the point that this is these things happen everywhere. There's so many things that we don't hear about. You can't possibly talk about all the crime in every city in the country, everywhere, all day. But in fact, horrific things happen all day, every day. And so he's trying to cast some light on that to raise awareness about that, which I think is a really interesting idea. It's an interesting use of Instagram, certainly.
And it's also hopefully going to get people to get away from the idea that, oh, that doesn't happen here. We don't have that problem in our neighborhood.
Is that
you
still,
probably do.
Is that still that pervasive? I don't know that it is. I don't how feel
many,
like it
how
is.
How many, as long as the drug culture has been around, how many parents still get the surprise of their lives when they discover that their innocent, sweet, adorable little girl or little boy is smoking pot or snorting cocaine or shooting heroin?
Well,
it's like, you know.
I think there's a difference, though, between not wanting to admit a loved one is doing something self-destructive and something not happening in your neighborhood.
It's still about denial.
Sure, but I think it's from different places, though. I mean, here's the thing. If someone says something about their neighborhood being safe or rough, I always ask them what they mean.
Good point.
You know, because sometimes that can mean a lot of different things.
Yes, it can.
A lot of times people can say, I live in a rough neighborhood. What is the crime data there? Or do you just mean the demographics of your neighborhood are personally frightening to you? And that's often what people mean. And I think it's really important to push that point and have that conversation. Because it's easy to, I mean, I think it's easy to, within language, in the way I think people say that without thinking about it.
People do. We do it all the time. And the truth is, you know, we have refused collectively to deal with violent crime.
How do you mean? I think we, what do you mean? We have
no,
refused.
I think we have collectively as a society refused to do any of the things that are really necessary to deal with violent crime.
What's necessary as somebody who can't enforce law?
Well, look, you've got there is more than one gun already in existence in this country for every American citizen.
Right.
Okay? And that's over 300 million. Yet, we refuse at every opportunity after Connecticut.
Look,
you know,
we didn't do anything after Sandy Hook,
yeah,
which I think
nothing.
Spoke volumes. Yeah.
Okay. So, what?
Well, I think there's a lot more to it than
gun.
I mean, I think the gun part is one piece of it, but I think there's a lot of other pieces too.
You know, capital punishment. No, that doesn't work. It doesn't deter anybody from committing a crime. And anyone who says that's always been the argument. It'll deter someone from committing a crime, knowing that they'll face the ultimate penalty.
No, because I think
no,
if you're committing a crime, I don't think you're thinking about getting caught. I think you're thinking about committing your crime and getting away with it.
Yeah.
I would never go, man, I really want to kill that guy. But I better cross the border into this state so I won't get put to death for it. No,
I mean,
I'd be like,
you know,
I want to kill that guy.
And I've heard some of the more interesting suggestions. Let's make bullets $5,000 a piece.
I've heard that. I talked to someone on the Business Lunch show this afternoon or yesterday afternoon because it's Sunday, but Saturday afternoon, who is a Chicago entrepreneur, and I want to have him back on the show. And also, there's a firearms instructor that I know. I want to have them on to have just a long form panel discussion about weapons and guns and the way we talk about guns and gun violence. Anyway, the thing he created was interesting because go to saltsupply.com. It is a gun. It is certainly an intimidating looking gun, but it shoots a pepper spray like thing far away, and it kind of makes between us, it will create a wall of something a little stronger than pepper spray. It's like a ghost pepper kind of thing, but it will stay in the air for 10 or 15 minutes
and make you exceptionally uncomfortable.
You'll be very, you know what, I maced myself one time. I thought someone was walking up behind me, so I had the mace on my keychain. And I,
oh, you did.
And you know, it has like a little snap cover.
Uh-huh.
So I unsnapped it, and you have to turn the trigger to be able to spray. There's two safeties there. So I turned the trigger because I just felt like someone was walking up behind me a little quickly. And indeed they were, but they were just running for a dang bus. And so the wind was blowing and I could see a shadow. And to be fair, this person was walking a little too close to me for as wide as the sidewalk was. They were definitely going to kind of bump into me. Anyway, I maced myself and it was very uncomfortable. I don't recommend doing that for fun and hobby.
Can we use you in a taser demonstration?
No, don't tase me,
you've already been
bro.
There?
No, I've never been tased, but I have no desire to be tased. Why would I want to be tased? But in fact, you know what? I don't carry mace now. I no longer do. I think it would more get in my way than anything else. I'd rather just fight with my hands.
You could probably whoop them, too.
Thank you, Saronis. Hi, Saronis.
Hi,
I haven't seen you in so long.
I still look the same,
We'll get you an ice pick for your collection.
Nope, I don't want anything like that. I mean, weapons can be taken away from you and used against you. So I have, you know, that's...
The power of your mind.
I don't necessarily. No, that's why I study martial arts, because I want a fighting chance if something happens. I want to, if someone takes my purse, if someone takes my keys out of my hand, whatever, I want to be able to hold my own for as long as possible. And I've said this before. I've had to use it twice, and both times it worked out for me. So, you know.
Proud.
I thank you.
Goof goals.
That doesn't mean I don't have an intimidating looking keychain right now.
Sure.
But it's part of, you know, things can be taken away from you.
Sure, certainly.
Every time I hear these, especially after what happened in San Bernardino, well, if someone in there had a gun, really? Really?
Oh, the
Is
argument
that your
of
answer?
Having, yeah. having guns. Yeah.
Really? That's your solution? Come
well,
on.
Well, I mean, look, there's a lot to say on the gun crime issue and the gun violence issue and the gun issue, the gun ownership issue. There are a lot of things. I know that the issue is this. We do this constantly with public narratives. We debate apples and oranges and we oversimplify things and we speak in absolutes. And that has never solved anything and will never solve anything. So, yeah, I mean, like, let's take the abortion debate for a minute. The reason it gets nowhere and it stays so heated is you have one side arguing whether or not you have the right to do it. And then one side, like whether or not it should even be legal. Right. It just like gets so.
It's legal. Go away. But it's immoral. We don't care. It's legal.
So it's like two different
Go
arguments.
Yeah.
And if you're not having the same argument, you're never going to get anywhere. You're never going to move forward. And so what we need to do is we need to all agree, hey, what we've been doing is not working and people have been losing their lives as a result. We need to all agree that's our goal and move forward on that. And so I think there's a difference between being right and being effective. And we're all, I think, very hung up on being right. And I, you know, want to do this and therefore I'm right and I'm going to put a stake in the ground. No one's going to move me and I shall not be moved from this one position. But if we all do that and dig our heels, then we're not going to get anywhere. And at the end of the day, I just want it to be about saving people's lives, especially young people. That's what's so tragic to me when you see young people.
The young people don't deserve this. I mean, you know, my generation, we didn't have guns on the street. Kids had a fist fight at school.
Right.
Yeah,
you know,
or we set up a fist fight after school, you know, to
or maybe some, you know, in the 50s it was a knife. You know, that was the most lethal thing that a kid would carry.
Wait, I thought you were 29. What?
Way past 29.
Oh, that
kiddo.
Look I just got. Oh, I got a kiddo. Oh.
Way past 29. But you know, I mean, like Bill said,
you know, called Amy kiddo. Oh.
Yep.
It's
anyway,
good, huh?
point being, is we all need to agree that what we have done so far, what we are doing now, is not effective, and we all need to come together, reach across the aisle, come together and figure out something that is going to work, at least start to move the needle, because I am tired of seeing young people in my city losing their lives when their whole lives are ahead of them.
Watching the Chicago Scanner Twitter accounts as we speak, there have been like 4 people shot in the last 2 hours.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and there are nights even when I was, you know, doing traffic overnights, a few months back. I mean, that's one of the things I would monitor is Twitter, and constantly, I mean, just the shootings that would consistently come in. Some nights were worse than others. I mean, I remember one night when there were 15 people shot within 2 hours. I mean, that's just insane.
Was that summer?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just unbelievable.
And that's part of the problem now. It's warmer out. When it's warmer out, the things come out that should not come out.
And the scary thing is the people who have the power to make changes, they see this. They can't pretend that they don't know it's out there. but they still want to just plant their feet and have a right fighting battle with someone on the other side of the street. They don't want to sit down and just go, you know, maybe the price tag for our intransigence is other people's kids and we need to stop. Maybe. It would be nice. But it's like they don't get it.
Yeah, I think
they don't want to get it.
I think that, and also I think there's so many little micro groups that need to band together for strength. There's so many, I mean, they're all worthy. They're all great causes, but there's probably three dozen different groups in the city, if not more than that, all working kind of on the same thing. Some are moms, some are students, some, you know, I think there needs to be a larger scale, more unified thing with a message behind it, with some force behind it, instead of, you know, 100 people here, 100 people here, 100 people here. Let's do a big citywide kind of thing, and then a national kind of conversation, as opposed to just kind of this neighborhood and this neighborhood and this neighborhood and this neighborhood. I think there's Venn diagrams need to happen. In a big way, and we need to find, you know, those moments of overlap and build.
There's your next project after the movie.
Oh, good.
Just what you needed.
Just what I need. More projects. No, I would take that project on. It's an interesting one. All right. Well, that bell means that we need to take a little break. We need to go to news and all that good stuff. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth hanging with you another hour before we turn things over to Dave Plyer. As ever, taking your calls and text messages at 312-981-7200. Thanks for being with us this fine evening. We have been all over the map covering so many different topics. Always fun, always an adventure to see where we land, indeed. Well, so next we have our very good friends are here joining us to talk about a very interesting project. Our filmmaking duo is here. I'm going to turn everybody's microphone on so we can all say hello. Please welcome Landis Wiedner and Mike Siskowskis to the show. They are the filmmaking duo that is making Comedy for a Cause, let's say, and they have a Kickstarter going, which you know how I feel about Kickstarters, because it is an exercise in self-esteem like you don't even realize until you do one, because it is ups and downs every day. Been there, done that. I totally get it. So I have a special place in my heart for people doing Kickstarters. So you have 47-ish hours left.
46
hours left of your Kickstarter. So please tell everybody at home all about your project so that everyone can run right now to Kickstarter and support you.
Sure. So it is a comedy web series about a guy with type 1 diabetes.
Which you don't normally think to associate those two things, comedy and diabetes.
Yeah, normally people don't think diabetes is hilarious. So what we wanted to do was create a show where the protagonist has type 1. And it's just a way to raise awareness and break stereotypes about what type 1 diabetes is. My sister has type 1, and Mike's best friend also has type 1. Mm-hmm. And so we've seen a lot of the things they've gone through. For me, it was a lot of lack of tact that people generally have when they ask questions regarding my sister's disease.
Like, what kind of questions would they ask?
Like one woman, a pump, an insulin pump is connected to somewhere, usually in your midsection, so somewhere like on your stomach is where my sister connects it. And then it has a cord, and then she puts it in her pocket. And this cord, sometimes you can see it hanging out. And this woman came up to her and like literally pulled on sister's pump cord.
No, need that.
And was like, what is that? And I almost
first of all, territorial bubble. Don't be touching people you don't know. She didn't know this person?
No, she didn't know my sister at all. It was an acquaintance of mine, and I didn't really know her that well either. And all of a sudden, she just stopped mid-conversation and did
touching
this.
Touching strangers?
Oh, and medical equipment. And, of course, my sister is such a badass.
Badass is fine. You can say badass.
Okay. Okay. You won't have to drop you on that
okay,
one.
Okay, good. she was just like handles everything with such grace, and also just like kind of makes people feel sort of, I don't know, silly for asking that. She's like, oh, it just keeps me alive, you know.
No big deal.
No
don't
big
pull
deal.
On it.
Yeah, please no big deal. Stop you might pull out my doing lifeline. That, though.
There's interesting, I mean, that's kind of an interesting sidebar, though. I think there's certain things that make people feel like they can touch you. I think an insulin pump is one. Mm-hmm. I think a hearing aid is one. Mm-hmm. I think a pregnancy is one.
Oh,
and
yes.
I think a tattoo is one.
Yep.
People feel like they can just, like, I have a tattoo on my shoulder. People in the summer will just go, that's so pretty.
Not okay.
You can still comment.
You can say that because it is a really pretty tattoo. I'll give myself that. You ain't got to be touching me. Also, it's summer and we're sweating. You know.
Right.
But a friend of mine was talking about this because she's really like not a toucher. People, she's like, she needs her space. And she was pregnant and she said, people walk up to me in the grocery store and just pat my belly.
Oh, yeah. People, you know, there's a real big correlation, I think, with people who have type 1 and people who are pregnant because, or women who are pregnant, mm-hmm. because they say the most horrendous things to pregnant women also. And it's like they have like tact just like goes out the window. Mm. I feel like it's a very, I made a list one time of all the things that people have said to my friends while pregnant. And it was, you know, things like, really, is there only one baby in there? Because it looks like there's two.
Thank you so much.
Right? Like, I don't understand. Understand why there's just like all of a sudden we feel like it's okay to comment on something like this just because we see it.
Yeah.
You know,
I think people don't know what to say. And so awkward things come out of their mouth sometimes.
Yeah,
but
there's word vomit.
Yeah, they do. They just kind of start talking.
Ooh,
and they,
I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. Blah, 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 blah. Here's everything.
Yeah. And I think sometimes people want to have information and they want to know, right. but it comes out stupidly.
Right.
Is what I kind of think happens.
Yes.
So your sister has experienced this.
Yes.
Indeed,
many
people
time.
Have pulled on life-saving insulin pump cords, right. which is really unfortunate.
Right.
Hopefully that's quick and easy to reattach that.
Yeah. But not really.
Probably not. No. But there are, you know, I think there are a lot of myths around type 1 and type 2. I think people kind of think about it like a type 1 is first, type 2 is second. As opposed to being completely two different things,
totally
and
different
one
diseases.
Has more like an autoimmune kind of piece to it,
if
I'm not mistaken.
Type 1 is the autoimmune disease and where your pancreas no longer produces insulin. And that's why you have to give yourself insulin, count your carbs, you know, keep track of your activity. It's a constant, constant thing. There's no cure for it either. It's not something that's brought on by lifestyle. It can be genetics. It can be a virus. It can be a multitude of things that reasons that you get this disease. And there's just because a lot of people will also ask, I've seen them ask, oh, well, were you obese as a child? Mm-hmm. You know, because they assume, because sometimes with type 2, there can be, you know, a correlation between lifestyle and type 2. That's not always the case, however. But because of that, there's also, and this was just explained to me by someone who has type 1 diabetes, there's also a shame around this disease because they feel like people don't understand it. Mm. And so they feel like, you know, everyone thinks I got this because I brought this upon myself. And so what we want to do is just like really break that and crush stereotypes around it and educate people. But, you know, we feel that you remember things better when you laugh.
Absolutely.
So
certainly.
Yeah.
Well, so that's sort of my next question is sort of the origin story of this project, because did you, I'm curious as to whether you came at it from, let's do something to raise awareness around type 1 diabetes, or, hey, let's do a comedy series. And then wouldn't it be neat if we incorporated this, or did these two things just separately collide?
It was kind of, I mean, so at first I didn't necessarily know that Hallie had type 1 when we first met and did the Second City thing. I mean, we met at a Second City improv class.
Hallie is my sister.
Landis' sister. And we just started talking outside of improv and decided, you know, we want to do shows. We want to start bringing comedy outside of this little bubble we created at Second City. And that even spurred into, okay, we want to do some writing together. We want to write something. This is bigger than just a live comedy show we put on. And we started brainstorming ideas about web series. And then we got to talking about, you know, our friends, our family, and your sister has type 1, my best friend has type 1. All of a sudden, those things kind of merged together. And we go, gosh, wouldn't that be cool to do comedy, which we love, do something that helps a community that's underserved, and just raise awareness. I think that's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that it was really a synthesis of that. It was kind of like when we came up with the idea, I was like, that's it. That's what we're doing. Done.
And
that's
you knew that one. Was the right one.
Yeah,
it was weird.
I don't
even
think we threw around one other idea.
No, the minute
we thought of that, we're like, done. That's
it. How you know it's a good idea. Mm-hmm. So from that moment until launching the Kickstarter almost 30 days ago, what is that timeline?
So we wrote a lot. And then we wrote a lot and a lot,
a lot, a lot, a lot, a lot of good ideas, a lot of bad ideas, but that's writing.
You got to write them all out.
Them on paper and then throw them away.
Yeah. And then we, decided that what we really wanted to do was launch the pilot episode on November 14th, which is National Diabetes Day. Mm-hmm. And we realized if we wanted to do that, we had to have this crazy timeline because we figured this out like in the middle of August. Mm-hmm. And that meant we had to, you know, cast it, we had to film it, we had to have actors memorize their lines, we had to do all of that stuff within a very, very short time frame. But we knew this is what we wanted to do because we wanted to just support the type 1 community in any way possible. And November is Diabetes Awareness Month. And so we thought, let's just go for it. And so it's been, I mean, Kickstarter has been insane, but we've also been at this pace like since middle of August because it's just been this nonstop whirlwind of just constantly creating and figuring out the next thing to do.
Sure,
yeah. This is no new thing to us. I think we almost thrive on those sleepless nights.
Yeah,
some people do, and that's perfectly valid. So you're looking for $48,000 on the Kickstarter, correct?
Correct.
And where are you now?
We're at a little over 30.
You know what? I have seen crazier things happen. I have seen bigger miracles happen on Kickstarter. There was a filmmaker that I met as a result of someone that I know tweeting, somebody give her a miracle. She's got 24 hours left. And she did. She made something like $20,000 in the last 24 hours. So you know what? Crazier things have happened.
Yeah. There we go.
I mean, like, and these are the things that keep happening to us. Like, I, while shamelessly plugging this at work and just sending emails out to VPs and stuff, which I probably shouldn't have done, but you know, no shame at this because this is something we love to do. I stumbled upon one of my coworkers who was like, hey, I don't really tell many people this, but actually my son has type 1. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, I want to talk to you a little more about this, like
great.
Share
connection.
This experience with me, tell me a little more so we could, you know, learn from you. And then he started going into on how he volunteers every year at the JDRF gala, which is held once a year. And he's like, hey, that is tomorrow. And Landis and I really wanted to volunteer, but we had missed the deadline. He's like, hey, I got a phone number for the lady who runs the volunteer coordination. Do you guys want to come? I'm like, yes, please. Yes.
Yeah, we would love to volunteer.
Yeah, we would love to volunteer. I'm like, where is this coming from? And then we go and we meet these awesome people and hear these awesome stories, you know,
and
a couple hours ago.
And just reaffirm as to why we're doing this. Because
exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, we had, I still remember there were these little girls walking around selling balloons for $100 that had little gift certificates in them. And they just melted my heart just to see them. And, they're 5 years old and they're struggling with this disease. Like, gosh, we need to do something. We need to let more people know about this.
Indeed. There's a lot to be done. All right. We need to take a little break. But when we come back, we are talking about this wonderful comedy series, For a Great Cause. Get thee to Kickstarter, please. What's the easiest way for people to find your project on Kickstarter? Because I know people are listening right now and going, okay, let's do this. Let's do this.
Go to Kickstarter, search type 1. We will pop right up.
It's all the first thing that comes up.
And you can also watch the pilot episode.
Yes, it's right there. It's right there on the Kickstarter page. But again, go to Kickstarter.com, type in at the search bar up at the top, kind of near the middle, type 1, and you can find this project. But we have plenty more to talk about with these guys, so we'll be right back in just a bit on 720 WGN. Gotta let that song play a little bit. It's one of my favorites ever. Love, love Morrissey so much. 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth. Thanks for being with us this fine evening. 312-981-7200 as ever, taking your calls and text messages. And we thank you for all the thoughtful comments thus far in the program. So my friends, right now we are talking with Landis Wiedner and Mike Siskowskis. They are a filmmaking duo who are creating this wonderful comedy series for a great cause. It's all about supporting knowledge around and curing and helping and funding and all this great stuff around type 1 diabetes, which is so widely misunderstood, but very pervasive. It's all around us. We all know someone with type 1 diabetes, and they are taking on this cause in a way that I so admire, because I think if we can laugh about it, we can figure it out. So this is a comedy web series called Type 1. They are running a Kickstarter. but they're also running down a Kickstarter because it is in its last 46 hours. 46 hours. That is a gut-wrenching moment in a Kickstarter campaign. So they are looking for $48,000, and they are a little over 30. So they're looking to us for our help. So I have supported them, and I hope that you will consider doing the same. So head to Kickstarter.com and search Type 1 and you will find their campaign. You can watch the trailer. It's very funny and very cool. Now, we're back. Okay, so let us talk a little bit about, we talked a little bit about the process of how it came together and all that. Talk a bit about the shooting the pilot, because I know it was on this really super frantic schedule and all that, but it was a pretty big scale production and you really kind of blew it out. So talk about that a little. And I know a lot of community support elements came in different places to do different parts of it.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we filmed in 3 days, the very beginning of October. And we were very lucky to have a lot of people that we know that wanted to contribute to the project. But part of our philosophy from doing live comedy shows in the past is that we make sure everyone we work with gets paid. So even if, you know, we had people offering to do things, you know, for at either some people doing lower costs and some said, you know, for free, but we just really wanted to make sure that people felt compensated for their time and their talents. Mm-hmm. And so the process, it's so interesting because to just on the back end, because we've never done anything like this before. And so it's very strange to be filming, you know, a scene that what really in the lineage of the episode, you know, like we'll be filming one scene at one location and then go to another location, and on one day we're filming scenes that like are at opposite ends of the episode.
Mm-hmm, sure. Mm-hmm.
And that is very strange to wrap your head around when you're in it, because you're like, oh wait, this is so much later. And so it was a very, very fun experience, I would say. Overall, it was the good kind of stress where you're like, oh my gosh, we are doing this. Mm-hmm. We're actually doing what we wanted to do. And we just worked with awesome, awesome people. Everyone from, you know, our videographers to our sound guys, to places that donated their spaces. Sully's house let us film there for 2 days, and that was awesome. And
I mean, you had friends who donated apartments for apartment scenes.
Yeah, we took
they
over
cleared out
apartments.
And said, "Do what you need to do."
I always wondered what that would be like to list your place of residence on a location scout and to say, you know, yes, please take over my apartment for a couple of days and shoot a film here. I think that would be cool to see it on the big screen of, wow, look what they did to my apartment. Mm-hmm. That's where I live. But I think it would be absolutely terrible in practice, though, to have like all that stuff around and all these people taking over. Like, could I just use my own bathroom to tinkle for 1 second? Because we could all just move, right?
Yeah, everyone, both my friends that let us use their apartments left. They were like, we don't even want to
out.
See.
But do what
and
you
it's
need
like,
to do, yeah.
But Mike and I are taking pictures, you know, just to make sure we're putting everything back exactly
smart.
How it was. And,
yep.
You know, that was just like
we
another
very
part
meticulous.
Of the process.
It was almost like a crime scene where we're like, everything needs to go back.
Right.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, we were literally angling stacks of paper at the right angle.
Yeah.
It was a little
that's thorough.
OCD.
Yeah.
There could
be
a career in the continuity editing of film after that, because that's all, little details like the, which way the straw is in a, you know, sitting in a drink. People launch entire forums on websites over that of, you know, in this movie and then the watch changes hands or whatever, all this craziness.
Yeah.
So tell us a little about what all the Kickstarter will cover. 48 grand is a lot of money, but it's not cheap to make a film. I know this firsthand. Mm-hmm. There, especially when you are committed to paying everyone, which you should be, because people need to get paid for the work that they do. Hello. But it is a substantial amount of money. So kind of talk us through what you hope to do with that money.
Yeah, so getting into this was a learning experience, and I don't think Landis or I knew how much goes into producing one 8-minute episode of a web series. I mean, we need to, each episode, we need to pay for actors, we need to pay for film crew, we need to pay for sound guys. There are guys holding boom mics for everything, miking up people. We need to pay locations if it's not a lovely donation from your friends. Mm-hmm. And then on set too, you have to get lunch for everybody. You have to get donuts in the morning and coffee.
You got to feed people to make
them happy. Videographers love their coffee.
Well, people function pretty well when you caffeinate them, as a general
rule.
Very true.
Very true. And then there's post-production. So you have sound editors and video editors that work countless hours to literally put these things together. And we called in so many favors, but moving forward, we want to keep doing it right and keep mm-hmm. paying everybody. So that's why it is, in our eyes, you know, a steep goal to reach, but we want to hit it and we want to do it right because mm-hmm. we're doing this for the first time, and why not blow it all out?
And have you felt like it's a little bit easier? I know sometimes it's hard to ask people for money for things, but have you felt like it's a little bit easier because it is connected to this bigger cause of working towards type 1 diabetes, you know, answers and cures and all that?
I thought it would be.
I think we both
but
did.
But one of my weaknesses is reaching out when I need help. So it is much harder than I expected to reach out and ask for money, even when it is tied to a cause that I believe very passionately about, because it's still asking for people to give their hard-earned mm-hmm. money towards something, and that it still makes me uncomfortable.
Sure,
you know, and we've got 46 hours left, and I have not gotten used to it at all.
And we're asking people to take a chance on us. I mean, this is something completely new to us. I feel all the confidence in the world that we're going to blow this out of the park, but. Yeah, it's like, hey, even mom and dad, you know, I went to school for design, and here I am going into a film venture. Can I have a little money? Hey, aunt and uncle. Hey, everybody.
Yeah, which is why we felt it was so important to produce the pilot episode mm-hmm. first.
To show your work.
To show what we're capable of doing, rather than just saying, hey, we've got this crazy idea, you know.
So you funded the pilot yourselves?
Yes.
Yeah, that came out of our pockets, yes. Mm-hmm.
Which I think, I feel like when I've seen someone doing any kind of, you know, in a funding round for any kind of venture, I always like to see that they've put some skin in the game, that they've put their own dollars into it on some level. Because that, to me, that says they're a little more committed to, you know, to making it happen.
Yeah, I think it speaks volumes about if you believe in your project and how
Absolutely.
Much you believe in it and how much you want it, mm-hmm. too. You know, if you're willing to throw your own money at it, then you believe in it,
you
too.
You obviously believe what you're doing.
Yeah.
That's right.
We want this to happen real bad. Like, real bad.
Yeah.
Well, it's for such a great cause,
exactly,
too.
Exactly,
and so,
yeah.
Have you had any luck with any of the... There's some celebrities. Maybe one of them plays on a sports team right here in our own city. Mm-hmm. Who...
Who would that be?
Rhymes with Butler. I don't know. Because right, he isn't Cutler. He's type one, but
he doesn't really
talk about it very much.
He does not. He was, I believe, he was diagnosed after he was in the NFL, which I can't imagine how hard that would be mm-hmm. to go from, you know, if you're in this professional life of sports, and you know, to try and maintain that. It's a very difficult disease to maintain. And I can't imagine how hard it would be in a professional sports mm-hmm. setting.
Sure.
But no, he doesn't talk about it a lot, but he's also more of a private person.
Well, here's hoping that he's free to be private about it, but here's hoping he also feels compelled to go to Kickstarter and help you make this project happen. It is called Type 1. Mm-hmm. We will all be looking for it and with great anticipation, and we will all be heading to Kickstarter to see what happens in 46 hours. I have utmost faith in you guys. And so what will be the next steps immediately after this? Back into production?
Yes. We cannot wait. And we also are putting together an advisory council right now made up of people who only have type 1 diabetes. And the response we've gotten for people that are interested in that is huge, because what we want to make sure we've already written these episodes, but we want to also make sure that, you know, we're hitting on issues that really relate to people with type 1 and not just relying on feedback from mm-hmm. my sister mm-hmm. and Mike's friend.
You want a wide swath of opinions.
Yeah, and so we've got people from all over the country that are interested mm-hmm. in being on this advisory council to just, you know, help make sure we're hitting the point and we're doing things right, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mike and I taught ourselves how to operate an insulin pump, and we were like, this is so hard and so complicated. Mm-hmm.
So you would understand it for the
exactly. Yeah. We wanted to understand it because there is, you know, there is a scene where they show you how to use the pump, and we needed to direct how to
do it
that.
Accurately.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. We
and
did
so
not.
Your actor does not have type 1 diabetes.
No,
he doesn't. And so we taught ourselves how to do that, but it's just also this fear of doing things wrong, and we really want to make sure we are doing it right by the type 1 community. So we're putting the advisory council together, finalizing scripts, and moving forward then with casting, production, and all that good stuff.
Onward. All right, my friends. Go to Kickstarter, search Type 1, help them get to their goal, because this is a very funny series, and it's for an excellent, excellent cause. We're hanging out. We're talking with Mike Seskowskis and Landis Wiedner, the filmmakers behind this wonderful project. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth. Thanks for being with us this fine evening. We're hanging out with Landis Wiedner and Mike Seskowskis. These guys are filmmakers, and they're making a comedy series right here in Chicago that is raising awareness for a great cause. It's called Type One, and it's taking a look, and it's a very funny and lighthearted kind of look, but around this very serious issue around Type One diabetes. And part of that they're working on, they're running a Kickstarter campaign, which, as many of you know, is a crowdfunding platform that relies on individuals to make micro backings of a project. And so they are here to ask for your support. I have backed them because I believe in this project, and I invite you to do the same. Head to Kickstarter and search Type One, and you will see their project, and you will see the trailer for it, and it is very funny, and I hope that you will consider supporting them. So we have talked a bit about the filmmaking part, but I kind of want to look at the bigger picture of Type One, really, because I can't say that I mean, I'm trying to think of other projects like this. I was going to say, you know, what is your competition with this? And I think that's even a part you have to put in on Kickstarter is, what are the risks? Mm-hmm. What's the competition? I don't know that I can really think of many portrayals of this particular issue, or I can't think of any projects that have really tackled it. You probably know better than I do, though. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we could speak to TV shows and movies that have done it poorly. And I think that's why they're... is a hesitancy by a lot of people to tackle this issue because of, the lack of tact when people go out there and film things. I mean, I could think of, everybody knows 30 Rock. It's a wonderful series written by Tina Fey. And there was one episode in particular where Tracy Morgan is diagnosed, or told he is diagnosed with type 1. And immediately they go to the, oh, you can't eat candy. Oh, we have to cut off your foot. Like, all these terrible, terrible things that are totally wrong. And then you see people look at that and they go, oh, that's what type 1 is, and that's exactly what type 1 is not. It is not those things.
Yeah, and that's something that in a lot of our research we've found just by talking with the type 1 community that is it's a very common upsetting thing where how type 1 is just completely portrayed wrong through media. We found that just in our conversations with people on forums, some people will make videos that check out all of these horrible portrayals of type 1 throughout history. And Mike and I have talked about this, and we're like, how is that okay for why is it okay with this disease to joke about it in such an uninformed manner?
Do you think that is?
It's not something that I feel like I could answer in an unbiased way, mm-hmm. because for me, I'm like, I have no idea, because yeah. I get big sister and I get angry, mm-hmm.
Well, it's like a simple Google search would crush half of those misconceptions. And that's mm-hmm. what I don't get. It's like, how are these big name and well-to-do filmmakers going out there and putting this stuff out there knowing that it's probably wrong and probably hurt. I mean, there are 3 million people in this world living with type 1, and it's hurting each and every one of them when you do that. How do you do that with good conscience?
Well, I think that's why projects like this need to exist, because it's not like many people go out there and they're about to tackle a subject and go and Google, what do I not know about the following, right? They take it kind of like topic by top, thing by thing. And I don't know that I don't know that it's even about like laziness or maliciousness. I think it's just a matter of not even thinking about, I think when we know something anecdotally, we think we just know it. Because it seems anyway like a widespread, such a commonly held belief, it must be true. And I think that's the danger with anecdotal thinking. We were talking about this earlier in the show with Rex Hupke, our official, unofficial political correspondent of the show about how people kind of decide politics in that way and think about elections in that way of, well, if everyone said so-and-so said this, it must be the case, mm-hmm. when in fact we're just too flippin' lazy to Google it, right?
Yeah.
So, so I think, I mean, that's scary to me that we're in a time where we have more access to information than ever, and yet we probably look things up the least, and we're probably mm-hmm. the least, yeah. least media literate of yeah. all, you know, least media literate of all times. So I think that's why these kind of projects need to exist, right? To kind of raise the awareness of around a topic and make people say, what do I not know about yeah. this? And I think until things are raised to a certain level, people don't even think to ask, what do I not know?
Exactly,
yeah, totally. And we've already gotten wonderful responses from people that don't have type 1.
Mm-hmm.
And they had said, you know, I didn't know that the pump was that complicated. And I was like, bingo, that is one of the major reasons why we were doing this, you know. And then another person said, oh, my gosh, your sister has to do this every 3 days. And I was like, yeah, you know, again, just very, very small things. And that's one of the, I mean, we think the funniest parts of the whole episode is this pump scene. And, you know, so the fact that we've been able to create this education through laughter, you know, and it's very mm-hmm. real, again, it just goes back to what we're trying to do. And we've been the feedback we've received has been very positive on that. And mm-hmm. it's been like, we feel like we're really like on the cusp of something here,
yeah.
you know,
sure.
and it's not like we're going to break every stereotype in one episode or even one season, you know, of this show, but at least we're chipping away at it.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, giving a home for people that have type 1 to say, oh my gosh, yes, that happens to me too.
Yeah, I mean, we want, you know, people who don't have type 1, because everybody knows someone who has it, we want them to, when they see someone maybe checking their blood sugar or giving themselves insulin, to not be like, oh, that's gross, you know, that's disgusting, why are you pulling out a needle? We want mm-hmm. them to recognize that this is a disease they have to live with, there is no cure, and to accept it and approach it in a kind manner, an empathetic mm-hmm. manner, and that's what our goal is with this web series, I think.
Yeah, I spoke with one woman who said she was on a date and she went to inject herself, and the date was like, can you go please do that in the bathroom? And
for giving herself a shot of insulin?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And she was like, I'm sorry your pancreas does this for you, but no, mm-hmm. I'm not going to go to the bathroom and do this, you know. And so it's, again, just stuff like that we're trying to, you know, not that you can make people mm-hmm. nice,
sure.
but at yeah. least you can arm them with the tools
sure.
to know.
You can throw possibilities for consideration.
Yes.
You know, you can't necessarily make someone take it into their own mind and accept it and use it properly, but you can throw out things for consideration.
Right.
And that's interesting because I have also heard someone say that. I was at a dinner, a group of people, and there was someone who she injected insulin, and someone said that to her, like, oh, do you not go to the bathroom for that? They weren't necessarily saying you should,
mm-hmm.
but yeah. I thought that was interesting that, like, we put taking insulin on par with peeing, right?
Right.
Yeah, and it's, why does it have to be this private thing? I mean, this is a daily struggle. This is something you're always having to monitor. Why do you have to hide that? Mm-hmm. Why do you have to hide your disease?
To make someone
you know?
Else feel comfortable.
Yeah, to make some schmo who doesn't really know anything about it
right.
a little more comfortable.
Right.
Well, and I think that's interesting too, right? I think it's easy on a lot of topics to feel uncomfortable because you really just have questions
mm-hmm.
or you don't know.
Yes.
You don't really know. So your kind of default is something's weird. What do I
get it away from me?
Get it away. Yeah. And, you know, I think when we do that, we only hurt the other person on the other end of that. And I think we rarely, rarely stop and say, this is possibly something this person is dealing with daily, hourly, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a minute of my life. I mean, I think there are so many situations in life that
totally.
Where that comes up and that can be applied that it just sit there and be uncomfortable for a minute. It's okay to be uncomfortable
yeah.
for a
yeah.
minute.
And
you might actually learn something.
And
yeah.
ask questions. I mean, that's been one of the most wonderful things about this process is that we've met so many people and just asking them questions, they're so willing to share because I think so many people don't ask about it. They just
mm-hmm.
get uncomfortable and close off on
mm-hmm.
it. And if you're just willing to let them talk about it,
mm-hmm.
You learn so much.
I think people
much.
Don't know how. I think
yeah.
that applies to a lot of things too. They don't
mm-hmm.
know how to bring it up. And I think it's funny when people want to ask a question, sometimes they'll preface it with, I don't mean to be rude.
Oh.
But like, it's
like,
not rude. It's something
not.
I'm
right.
doing every day or
right.
it's who
then
I am.
Then it all of a sudden implies that it's rude, but you know, if you're
or that it's some like it's a defect or something.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right. I mean, yeah. I've seen that in so many things. I mean, I've seen that span into religion, right? I mean, somebody not too long ago asked me something about Hanukkah, but she prefaced it with, I don't mean to be rude, but can you answer this question about Hanukkah? I was like, that's not...
It's not that's rude. Not that's, rude. That's my belief.
That's a legit thing about Hanukkah that you're asking.
Right. You're asking about facts.
That's a fact. That's not... I didn't make it up. I'm just here to follow the rules here.
Yeah.
Which I, you know, I think is fine. People don't know what to say. And I mean, I think human beings being uncomfortable is an endlessly fascinating topic. Because we do the dumbest things when we're uncomfortable. And sometimes we do the saddest. Right. Sometimes when people, I think especially around health and and very personal matters like bereavement, we don't know what to say. So we vanish. Mm-hmm. And that kills me every time I hear about that. When someone just, you know, later says, well, I didn't know what to say. So I just kind of avoided him or her or whatever. And I think that's the least human reaction to any kind of human thing.
No, feel something. Feel an emotion.
Well, and also show compassion.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's everyone's so worried to say the wrong thing, you know, that they, again, go into that silence and don't say anything. And, you know, I guess that kind of contradicts what I've been saying, because there's just been so many rude comments I've heard. But again, it's like kind of your thing, like take a beat, take a second. You know,
so why does this bother me? Mm-hmm. Is it because I don't know or because I'm legit offended by this person doing a life-saving medical act?
Right. Yeah. We actually, tonight, it was so funny. We were talking. We met this one young woman with type 1, and she shared with us the story that she was on a date, and she went to preface, you know, that I'm about to test myself, just want to let you know. Mm-hmm. And he goes, oh my gosh, I have type 1 too.
Oh. Yeah. Love connection.
Yeah, she did say that.
Yeah.
Are they still together?
No, it didn't last. I know, sad, it didn't last. But she's, you know, and she shared with us a few more dating stories that were just like wonderful things like that. You know, like she was on another date with a guy and it was the same thing. Like, I'm about to check myself. You just want to give you the heads up. And he was like, oh, you know, I just moved, but when in my old city, I was on the board for the American Diabetes Association,
there you
know?
Go.
And she's like, oh my gosh, oh, it's love, happening? You know, like
serendipitous.
Yeah. I mean, and so there, you know, there, it's not like it's all horrible things. There are people out there who are extremely compassionate and, you know, obviously have, and don't always, you know, say horrible things.
Sure.
But yeah, I think that just that, you know, Mike and I subscribe to this belief of follow the fear. You know, anything you're afraid of, you need to check that out.
Yeah. I'm totally with you on that.
Yeah. And so I think this kind of goes with that. And it's just like, follow that fear of whatever it is of, you know, what
unknown, whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had a friend who had, she had lymphoma. And she and I talked a lot about how people she thought were the coolest characters and that were relatively unfazed suddenly vanished because they didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And she said one of her favorite interactions was with someone she didn't really know very well. It was kind of a group setting. And this woman, she said, I felt like I was being watched. I know she was kind of watching me and she kept looking. She was wearing like a scarf on her head. Mm-hmm. She lost her hair during chemotherapy. And she saw the woman really looking and she knew the woman had questions, but she didn't want to push. She just wanted to kind of be. And finally, the woman leaned over and she said, I don't know anything about lymphoma. Will you tell me something? And she, you know, basically opened the door for her to talk and say it in the way that she wanted. Mm-hmm. And I loved that story because to me that was such a good thing to tuck away in our brains to apply to so many things later. Mm-hmm. That could be anything.
Yep.
That can be absolutely anything. That can be, you know what? If you're on a date with someone and they're like, I'm going to check my blood sugar, say, I don't know anything about that. Yeah. Tell me. Teach me that. What is that?
Yes.
And that's, I think that's the approach we've taken for this web series because, I mean, Landis and I, neither of us are type 1. I mean, we have people close to us with type 1, but we acknowledge we don't know a lot about this. We know from our interactions with our friends and our sister that these are the things we know, but...
We'll never fully understand the disease. And we want to make that very clear, like that we'll never fully understand what it takes. Because so many times, too, I hear people who have a friend who has type 1 and they're like, you know, he checks himself and it's like not a big deal. He's not really even thinking about it. And I'm like, no, he's doing a crazy amount of math. And it just, he does it all the time. So you can't even really see that he's doing that in his head. And he's also acting as his own pancreas. Like he is being an organ in a bar. You know? Like, that's, I think that's pretty impressive.
That maybe could be a subtitle for your series, Oregon in a Bar. Just throwing it out there.
That'll be an episode.
Just throwing it out there.
Writing it down now.
And so how many seasons are you hoping to do, and how many episodes per season?
You know, as far as seasons go, I would, you know, it's kind of like one of those things you want to keep doing it until it no longer makes any sense. Mm-hmm. You know,
until story's told.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, we want to do 72 seasons. You know, until it runs its course, essentially, because, you know, we all have those shows that we love, and then we say, like, oh, they really should have stopped, yeah, like, mm-hmm, at season five,
they're,
you know?
Being a dead horse after the third.
Yeah, yeah. And so we want to just keep creating good art at the same time. Mm-hmm. And we've also been approached by so many people that have said, you know, you should do a show like this about X, Y, or Z. You should, mm-hmm, do a show about, mm-hmm, this, you know, about Asperger's, about, mm-hmm, hearing disabilities, about, mm-hmm, you know, and a lot of people, I think, really gravitate towards this, you know, laugh through the pain, cope, mm-hmm, you know, cope through laughter, mm-hmm, type of thing. Not that, you know, we're going to continue making series about medical issues,
yeah,
but we don't know.
I've already picked out my second documentary topic, so you never know.
Yeah, I mean, we're always kind of, you know, thinking about stuff like that, so.
The film bug has you, indeed.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it really does.
All right, guys, here it is. They have less than 48 hours to go. So here's what we need to do. We need to go to Kickstarter.com. We need to search Type 1, find this comedy series for such a wonderful cause, all about supporting type 1 diabetes and raising awareness around it. If you cannot support it as a backer on Kickstarter, you can help them still by sharing it on social media or emailing the campaign to people that you know who you believe would be interested in this campaign. It's very important to support them in these final hours because, as you've heard me say on this show through other Kickstarter projects we have talked about, including my own, if they do not reach the goal, they get zero. And that would be so tragic, especially for such a worthy, worthy cause as, mm-hmm, this. So please, even a dollar counts, head over there.
Seriously, yeah, everything.
Yep.
We'll take everything.
Absolutely. Every single dollar. Because if you're a dollar short, you get zero.
Exactly.
So that dollar would come in handy then. So head to Kickstarter. Head over there, search Type 1, support this campaign in the way that feels right for you. Mike Siskauskas and Landis Wiener, thanks so much for being with us this fine evening.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Thank
for
you,
having
Amy.
Us.
And good luck in this endeavor. I cannot wait to see the big win here in just less than 48 hours.
We're feeling confident.
It'll be bad.
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
It's going to happen. I'm super excited. All right, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back in just a bit on 720 WGN.